Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Well, good evening. Welcome to the Brentford Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. It's Jake Watson in for Matt Beardall this evening. We have got Dave Laney Lane and Katie B from The Besotted with me until 9 p.m. this evening. But before we go straight into some Brentford chat, it is Wolves against Manchester United in the Premier League this evening. It has just kicked off. Just to run through the team news very, very quickly again. The big headline, I suppose, for Manchester United is that Daniel James starts this evening after scoring on his debut last week. So it's De Gea, Wan-Bissaka, Lindelof, Maguire, Shaw, McTominay, Pogba, James, Lingard, Martial and Rashford. And for Wolves is Patricio Doherty, Bolly, Cody, Bennett, Johnny, Moutinho, Dendonka, Neves, Jota and Jimenez. I will let you know when there are some goals in that one. But let's talk Brentford. Katie and Dave, a very good evening. How are we both?
Yeah, I think we're both all right.
Yeah, we're all good.
Yeah, we've done the holy the trilogy. We've done the win, the draw, and the defeat. It's almost like the perfect hat trick. The header, the left foot, the right foot. So yeah, it's been a very, very mixed start to the season. But all in all, not a bad one.
Yeah, no. Joining us on the phone a little bit later on, we'll have a Jim Levack. So yeah, it is strange, isn't it? Because I felt over the last few seasons that Brentford have been kind of the entertainers, in the sense you're not really ever quite knowing what you're going to get from them. But looking at the results, and I'm purely going off the results, and please do tell me if I'm wrong, it seems that there's, well, in terms of goals, there's not been a huge amount.
No, there hasn't been a huge amount.
And surprisingly few.
Yeah.
And it could have gone a lot better, and it could have gone a lot worse. If we hadn't have won at Middlesbrough the previous Saturday, we'd be looking at, you know, two defeats and a draw, which would have been disastrous. Or, you know, a defeat and two draws, which would have been pretty, you know, head-scratching and a little bit, oh, God, how's this going to work out? But equally, we did win at Borough. We could have won at the death on Saturday where, Jean-Vier put a header wide where it was easier to put it in. And we should have beaten Birmingham. So we could have been 100%. So it's one of those. We're not the finished article by a long way.
There's a lot to be positive about, though.
There is, yeah. And there's been a big turnover of players. So, you know, a lot of players are finding their feet. Some are coming back from injury, like Benrahma as well. So it might take 5 or 6 weeks before we know what kind of, you know, the real potential of this squad.
Yeah, no, because I suppose it was a slightly strange summer. I'm fully aware you would have spoken about it over the last few weeks with Matt on the show, you know, with Neil Mopay going, and there was also links with Benrahma as well. Now, I know he has been injured, but it was kind of like that was all everyone was initially talking about, wasn't it, over the summer, and then the season started, and then that defeat to Birmingham, and if anyone, you didn't even need to watch it, just seeing the highlights, that, I mean, it was about as smash a grab as I think I've ever seen an away win.
We did talk about this, you know, the week after or the Monday after. Yeah. You know, there's this fairness league table now, which that you can judge how fair a result is.
Right.
And apparently this is the most unfair.
What, in the history of football?
History of football, yeah. No, in the history of sports.
No, it doesn't surprise me. It was quite unbelievable, wasn't it? But, you know, but you say that the signs in general over the course of the three games, whilst a mixed bag, there's loads to be positive about.
Yeah, definitely. There's that kind of churn that we've had over the summer, we were all very excited because we brought in all these great players, lots of buzz around them. And then suddenly the sort of the narrative shifted to who's going to leave, who's going to go, are we going to lose Mopay, are we going to lose Benrahma?
And when it happens so late in the window as well, it's so frustrating, isn't it? Because, you know, if you're going to lose someone like Mopay, which you knew there's always a chance of doing it, it doesn't matter if you get 40, 50, 60 million pounds for him. If you do it on blooming deadline day, you haven't got time to bring anyone in anyway, so it disrupts everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think we've always the club always say we get our business done early, we know what we're doing, we've got, you know, eyes on the prize kind of thing, but other clubs are always going to disrupt that, and I think this window was probably one of the first times we've really felt that like, oh God, what's going to happen? Oh God, everyone's coming in.
It was a proper window, though, wasn't it? Yeah. You know, we spent big, and we got in big as well, and it just shows you the progression. You know, where we were buying players for $500,000 and selling them for $3 or $4 or $5.
Now we're being three or four and five,
yeah. And then selling them for 20. You know, I know it's only one at 20, but you know, Konsa went for 12. And Benrahma, we put a bounty on him for $25 million. So, so you know, that's where we're at, and there is this evolution and this, you know, change of mindset amongst the fans as well. That it's really tough. It's difficult to get your head around sometimes. The numbers have increased.
Yeah. Again, I know you would have done this a million times already, but what is the ambition for the season? Has it changed since the window, or has it changed following the first three games? What is the thought? You know, because it'd be wonderful, wouldn't it, with the last season at the stadium to kind of mark it with a promotion. Is that a viable, realistic ambition?
I think we started the transfer window thinking we're going to go up, and we brought all these amazing players in, and we're like, we're going to do it. This is the season. We are going to do it.
Our year.
And then, yeah, exactly. And then I think that slipped away a little bit towards the end. And I think we had a bit of anxiety about all these new players gelling, how they're going to work. And then the first three games have probably made us still a little bit anxious. Still not quite sure it's going to happen. Still not quite sure they're going to gel.
It's an impossible league to predict anyway, isn't it? It really is.
And let's not forget, we've got a trip to Elland Road on Wednesday. We will be talking a lot about that later on.
Yeah.
So that's kind of... That could go one of two ways as well. That could go very, very well or very, very badly. So we'll see what Wednesday brings. But you know, we were talking in the pre-production meeting in the ring that, you know, we were saying, you know, what have we learned so far?
Yeah.
And you know, we've come up with, you know, there was five things on Saturday, Katie. That you go first with your five.
Standout
observations and things that we kind of, you know, we walked out at 5 o'clock thinking,
Yeah, so at 5 o'clock, the things I was thinking at 5 o'clock on Saturday were, actually, Dalsgaard at the beginning of the season looks good.
Yeah.
Looks fresh, looks attacking, looks committed, looks exciting. And we could not say that at this time last year. So given that he's now one of our longest serving players, that's a nice thing to be able to say.
In his defence, let's remember he did have the World Cup. He played in the World Cup for Denmark, and he came back and he was absolutely knackered. So,
yes.
Yeah.
No, and I respect that. Yeah. I respect his knackeredness. My second thing is Matthias Jensen, who's super exciting midfield that we have just bought in. But I thought on Saturday he looked pretty lost in that first half, in our first setup. But when we started, when we made those changes, when we changed our lineup, brought on De Silva, I thought he looked great. He suddenly looked excited, came alive, spreading the ball around, driving forward. So I think for me, we've got to see how he fits in terms of what formation we're playing. And off the back of that, my third thing is Norgaard, our new defensive midfielder, looked a bit disconnected from the other players. That was his debut, so I feel a little bit mean. Maybe I'm being a little bit...
You're very harsh.
Unfair. I know, brutal. It's that pre-production meeting in the pub. But I thought, yeah, he wasn't dropping back enough, wasn't picking up the balls from defence, wasn't bringing it out, which is kind of how we play. So that felt like a thing to work on or a thing to watch. But again, that was his debut. Maybe I should calm down. Ratic, one of our central defenders, very young, missed a sad penalty in our Carabao Cup that maybe we don't want to talk about.
No.
He looked great, positioning was great, looked lively, looked strong, but again, always passing backwards, always passing sideways, not driving it forward, which is so central to our play. And my last thing is that Ollie Watkins might not play like the striker we want him to, but he can score strikers' goals.
Yeah. Anything to pick up from that, Dave?
Yeah, well, I'd agree with all of that, but the Watkins point especially, you know, we haven't got a natural number nine after the departure of Morpay, and there's a lot of pressure on Watkins' shoulders, and, you know, he's beefed up clearly over the summer. They've obviously had him in mind for playing that role, whether it's...
I suspected this may happen.
So we've got until January to persevere with him. You know, my observations were, you know, I think it was great to see Benrahma back on the subs bench. Great to see him come on. Brilliant reception, I thought. Sergi Canos had a Jekyll and Hyde match, but the last 20 minutes, it was just sensational.
Yeah,
there's a lot of pressure on his shoulders. Brian Mbeumo was he had the best ever match by a Brentford player whose surname begins with MB. we haven't had any of those before, so that was a good one.
Good job, Brian.
I think he's going to have that prize for a little while.
how's your maths? How's your statistics?
I love a football statistic. Right. I'm awful at maths. It's like when you change something from maths into football, though. I can just about work it out, but go on.
Okay, so our attendance on Saturday was exactly 11,000. What are the actual chances of that getting an exact 1,000? Is it 1 in 1,000? I mean,
I don't know.
Can we open that one out to the world?
What are the odds of getting 11,000 on the nose? And if you know, 0208 70 25 58.
And lastly, it was actually too hot for long trousers on Saturday. Oh. It was a shorts day, and I didn't dress appropriately. So that was the last thing I discovered.
These are the important topics all being covered here. So look, those are the thoughts of Dave and Katie from that 1-1 draw. But let's hear from the Brentford fans now. Oh, they thought after that game.
The chances all came in the last 20 minutes. Once we changed it up to 4-4-2, we looked a lot better going forward. I think De Silva really was strong in the midfield, and Benrahma, you know, did a nice few tricks. Basically, Canos came alive. His last 20 minutes, Canos was superb. We had lots of good chances just past the post. Scored that goal. Keeper had a couple of really good saves. But the first 70 minutes, you have to say, Cole probably just edged it and deserved to be one up. It's only, you know, in the end, I think 1-1 was a fair result.
No, I don't think we deserved anything more than a draw from that. There were some good bits in there as well. There was a few promising bits. But overall, I thought we looked a little bit unsure of our formation still, which I guess is just to be expected, unfortunately. A few flashes and, you know, a few bits of excitement. But the whole looked a decent team. I'd imagine they'll be doing okay this year. Perhaps a little bit more experience than we've got, but there's enough there to build. And I think we're just so desperate to get going straight away and get moving. I think it's going to be a slightly frustrating start for us.
We still haven't got a proven number nine. I think you saw when Force came on, he was sort of making the runs that Ollie wasn't. I think we're all hoping Ollie can be that player. I honestly would start with Force up front. Let's give him a run. If the club believe him, let's play him from the start. It was a disjointed performance for the Bees. We're not at our ultimate best. You've only got to look back to when we last played these and we were absolutely buzzing, the interplay of players. And yet again, it just wasn't quite happening today, especially in that first half. It seemed a very disjointed performance again to me.
Yeah, no, I think it was disappointing kind of moving the ball forward. There wasn't enough connection between defence, great, midfield, great, forwards, great, but it was too slow between them. There needs to be some sort of connection forming eventually, but I just think between each sort of position on the pitch, there wasn't enough kind of movement. It was too slow, and I think we need to work on that.
25 years ago, my friend Mark and I were in London, and we asked the guy at the tube, he said, are there any matches? He said, yeah, go see Brentford. We came out to here to this game, or we saw Brentford versus Hull City 25 years ago, and then I knew that Griffin Park was closing, and I said, I got to come back. So 25 years later, I call myself the Alopecian, and I came back with my wife to go catch a match, and it was absolutely fantastic. I think our midfield needs to get a little bit more gelled, but give them time. By the end of this year, if we can keep all these players, we're going to be top four easily.
It was a fair result. I thought first 60 minutes, we were the better team. We should have got the second goal when we were 1-0 up, and then you got back into the game over the next 20, and then you deserve to get the equaliser, to be fair. We really need to get that second goal, because without that, then we was always going to have that at least a period of the game where we were being on the back foot. And then from about 60 minutes onwards, you got back into the game. And then when it came to it, you could see the goal coming. And then probably towards the end of the game, we were lucky to keep it at 1-1, because I know you missed a couple of sitters at the end, particularly the header at the back post. That was a big miss. But yeah, over the course of 90 minutes, I thought 1-1 was fair.
It's an indication of how much we've solidified at the back, and I think that we owe a lot of that down to Pontus Janssen. I thought he was absolutely outstanding today, and yeah, we definitely look a lot tighter, a lot less chances being created. However, I did think that Jean-Vierre and Rachic and Henry did give away the ball in midfield and sort of bringing the ball out from the defence a few times, which created a few chances. But I think with Pontus at the back, I thought him and Dalsgaard today were the standout performers for me. With half an hour to go, we really started clicking, moved Canos to wing back, brought Benrahma on, brought De Silva on. But we've gained a point having not played really, really well, and I think that's an encouraging sign. The best teams play still get results and still get points when they're playing badly, and that's something that we've done today.
We're just saying you've probably got to allow for now, probably maybe five or six games for us to work as a team. Yeah, it's just frustrating because you can see we've got the quality, the talent there. First, Hull were a good team. They've got a good unit. They play to their strengths. But yeah, it's just frustrating. We should have scored. John Vay should have scored that header towards the end. I think on balance of play in the second half, we should have nicked it. But yeah, you know, we want to see us winning. We want to see us playing our beautiful football and battering teams. But, you know, if a lot of the signings had come in 4 or 5 weeks before they did, they could have had all the pre-season, the friendlies, etc. But they didn't. And no matter how frustrating it is and how much I swear during the game, it's just going to take a little bit of time. We've just got to be patient. But it's annoying being patient because you want to see us battering teams like them, don't you?
Brilliant stuff. Those were the Brentford fans, their views. Following that draw with Hull, loads to get through this evening until 9 p.m. Up next here on the Brentford Fan Show, we're going to hear from the Brentford boss, Thomas Frank, and also going to be joined by Brentford journalist Jim Levack. Do stay with us.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Love Sport.
Yeah, welcome back to the Brentford Fan Show. Here on Love Sport, we've got the guys from Besotted. We've got Dave and Katie. In a short moment, we're going to be speaking to Jim Levack. But before that, let's hear from the Brentford boss. This is Thomas Frank speaking after that draw with Hull.
Thomas, how do you reflect on this afternoon's draw?
I think that we, first half, didn't hit our level, especially offensively. Mainly, actually, 10, 15 times where we either throw the ball away or didn't have the top quality touch or bad decision on the path, which could have created good opportunities. And that's a lot of opportunities. But okay, that's the way it is. Sometimes you can't just hit it bang on. Second half was better in terms of creating opportunities, playing more forward, also better touches and create the most important thing, chances. And I'm pleased that we, after being 1-0 down, came back, equalised, and we just kept going, kept pushing Hull backwards, and created two or three chances, big chances. So if Ollie score or Julian score, okay, it's a perfect afternoon at Griffin Park where we get 3 points at home and everybody's happy. Now we are not satisfied. We are okay, a point, let's move on to the next game because they're coming thick and fast. The disappointing thing is that we concede them. A goal I think we shouldn't concede in a situation where we need to do better. And then on a day where we didn't hit the highest level offensively, you know, we win 1-0.
What maybe stopped you hitting that high level today offensively?
Yeah, I think some days, if I knew that, I'd be very rich. I think today our offensive players didn't hit their highest level throughout 90 minutes. And I think that was one of the main reasons for that. But also that, you know, of clicking and the relations, they just need to be better. And it was the first time Matthias Christian played central. Brian had his first start, even though that I thought he did quite well. And when some of the main guys maybe not hit the high level in first half, that's where you can see we were a little bit disjointed. But second half was definitely better.
I mean, that's a fair point. There's still quite a few guys in that team who haven't had that many training sessions or that many matches as Brentford players.
I would say that I'm confident we'll constantly get better. I'm 100% sure. Of course, we want to win a game at home, but you know, it's Championship and there's no easy games.
And in terms of the squad options, you were able to welcome, so Christian made his first Championship debut. Camo was back on the bench and Saeed as well.
Yeah, and yeah, it was nice. I think we looked strong as a squad now. That was very pleasing. I'm very happy with that. It's good to have Camo back on the bench. Okay, we didn't use him today, but that will come in the future for sure. Nice to see Saeed back out there. It was good to give Christian his debut.
You spoke about obviously when Neil gone, people stepping up, a second goal for Ollie and another assist for Sergi as well today.
No, I agree. I think that's the main thing that Sergi and Ollie they keep you know racing in their level because we need that. And I'm pleased with their second half. I think first half they didn't hit the highest level. Second half much better and they they produced a chop striker goal.
And there was a couple of shouts. Henrik had two. Do you feel there could have been a penalty late on in the first half and late in the second half?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, on VAR, I think they could have been pens, but that's the way it is. It was not like, you know, 100% clear cut. Maybe on VAR, but not from the outside. Maybe, I don't know.
And there we are, the thoughts of Brentford boss Thomas Frank. And Tawan, who was in that building, that room, hearing Thomas, was Jim Levack, joins on the line now. Jim, good evening.
Good evening.
Initial thoughts, you know, from hearing Thomas and speaking to him after that game. You know, what was a draw a fair result?
I think it was, yeah. I mean, Hull, let's not forget, they're a pretty decent side. Decent front three. Haven't made too many changes, and I thought they looked quite good. Gwizdicki and Jared Bowen, you know, he was given far too much space for the goal. But the fact is, Brentford are a work in progress at the moment, and Thomas's reaction after the game was very much that, you know, we do need to be patient. When he says he's 100% certain things will improve, I believe him. I think they will. You can't expect, you know, 4, 5, 6 new players to come in and for everyone to hit the ground running. That said, Wednesday night's going to be very, very tough. For me, that's a bit of a free hit. If we win it, fantastic. If we don't, it's part of the process. And again, patience will be very much a virtue, I think.
Evening, Jim's Dave here. How you doing, mate?
Hi, Dave.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for coming on tonight. The press conference after the game, he obviously is a very calm man. He, you know, he speaks very, very, you know, he's measured. He's not a sort of a ranter. But the fact is that we've had three home games now. We've gone behind in all three of them, and we haven't been able to sort of pull or reverse the game and turn a 1-0 deficit into a victory. We almost did it on Saturday. We could have actually won that. But do you, you know, how long do you think it's going to take to gel?
I would say you'll start to see signs probably after about 7 or 8 games, to be honest. I mean, there were signs even with Mbeumo and Ollie Watkins linked up quite nicely, little dummy on the edge of the box and a 1-2. You know, on another day that works, but that's a good sign for me. Mbeumo gets the ball early on, and clearly he was quite shocked by the physicality of, I think, a couple of challenges on him. But as the game wore on, he sort of seemed a bit more prepared for it and was actually warding people off. You know, you can use your arms a bit more now to keep people away. And he did seem like he was coming, acclimatising to it, almost.
Hey, Jim. Katie here.
Hi, Katie.
Hey. Can I ask what your thoughts are on the on Frank's team selection and that kind of ongoing question around who's our number nine and do we have a proper number nine?
You get me in trouble. I mean, personally, I think it. If the directors of football were being completely honest, they would be pretty disappointed that we didn't get a natural number nine in to replace Neil Morpay. I think, you know, various things conspired against them on deadline day, and that's just the way it goes, I think. You know, we have got Ollie Watkins. He made a statement in the press conference that he was going to be our number nine now, which, you know, that's a statement that he set it out there. And, you know, Watkins is a big, strong physical presence. He needs to maybe be a little bit braver in some situations. But I think he'll learn how to be a bit more sort of clever in the box like Morpay was. He's a different kind of player to Morpay. But, you know, I think the team selection, you know, I looked at the team before the game and I thought, you know, fair enough, that's not a bad start in 11, and it's a pretty good bench too.
The other really interesting sort of transition during the game, I thought, was when we switched from 3-5 at the back and we went 4-4-2, and Sergi Canos switching role, and he came into his own. Sergi Canos, I thought, was inspirational in those last 20 minutes. He set up the equaliser. He almost supplied a beautiful cross for Ollie Watkins to put a volley in. And there was one or two other chances that Canos was involved with. The whole City players really did struggle, and it looked like that he was a substitution. He looked like, you know, he'd been plugged in. How big a role does Canos play in this team, Jim?
I think he plays a very big role. I'd like to see him have a few more good sort of 90 minutes rather than sort of 20, 30s. But I do think, you know, you say there was a slight formation switch, and that was obviously, you know, a factor in the last 25, 30 minutes. I also think the presence of Benrahma gave Hull something else to think about, and that obviously, that's got a ripple effect, and it frees up other players to do their thing, you know. I mean, Canas was pretty knackered, as you say. But, you know, he did look tired, but, you know, he wants it, he's passionate for it. And I think, you know, there were some good signs, and it is fine margins. If Janvier puts that header in at the end, or the ball doesn't sort of sit on the keeper's hip when, you know, Benrahma's through, we're talking about a 3-1 win, you know, and everyone's happy.
Yeah,
so
true.
It is, you know, it's fine margins, isn't it?
Jim, after the break, we're going to be talking about that article that's been put up about, you know, spirituality and is our football grounds churches as such.
I worship you, Dave. You
I know that, and it is slightly cringy if I am honest with you. And
I liked that.
It has been reported
that
to the relevant
nice
authorities. So you know what, but I know Griffin Park plays a special place in your heart and your family, and you know the relationship with your dad and your dad taking you.
Yeah.
You know, but let's concentrate on that, you know, that Reverend Peter Crumpler article. And do you agree that football grounds are churches?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, for me, if I drive down this South England Road and I come over the bridge, even if it's not a match day, I get a sort of, you know.
Well, you leave it easy.
No, I do, you know. Yeah, no. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a special place, isn't it? And, you know, I'm not particularly religious. I think it's possibly more tribal than religion, and there's a sort of a grey area between the two. But yeah, certainly, you know, I've got, you know, as you say, my dad supported Brentford, his dad supported Brentford. And there are times, you know, when there's penalties and special moments, I look over to where my dad used to sit and then look up at the sky and think, yeah, so there's a sort of a triangle of, I wouldn't say spirituality, but there's certainly something bordering on that. Yeah, I don't see why not.
OK, Jim, absolutely lovely stuff. Thank you so much for your time this evening. We're going to continue before 9 p.m. to look ahead to, is it tomorrow? No, Wednesday. I've got
Wednesday.
My days confused. I don't know what day of the week it is.
This is Love Sport.
So welcome back, Brentford Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. We've got Dave Laney Lane and Katie B from The Poseidon on for another half an hour or so. And we want to talk about, don't we, with Griffin Park. It's the season. It's the last one before we kind of move on. And it's a nice time, nice opportunity, isn't it, to talk about the ground and what it represents. Because even as someone as not a Brentford fan, I know how kind of special that ground is and how unique it is. I mean, what does it mean? We're just speaking to Jim there, what it represents to him and his family, how he sees his dad. What does it kind of represent to you, and how sad are you almost that this is not going to be there forever?
I guess the more I think about it and the closer it does actually get to us leaving, you realise how special it is to so many people.
Yeah.
So the analogies with worship and church and faith, they do, it does become, the analogy becomes stronger. And, you know, and it's also, the place means so many things to so many different people, and so many people that aren't actually around anymore. So there are, you know, we've been there since 1904. It goes through four or five generations of supporter, all of which the club meant everything to them at their time of support, worship, following. And, you know, so when we will leave, I think it is right for us to kind of spare a moment for not only ourselves and what the place means to us, but what it has meant to our, you know, our fathers, forefathers and their forefathers.
Yeah.
So I guess that the spirituality does come into it. You know, again, I'm not a religious person. I don't have a faith, but I do understand that the place it means something special. It's in the hearts of so many people. So the lineage is there.
Yeah, there's something sort of beautifully intangible about it as well, that not only are you connected to like your own past and your own family past, but all these other people's family pasts as well. And there's something really kind of wonderful about that. Mm. But I've got some thoughts from some other Brentford fans, which are way more articulate than I'm going to be in this moment. So John says, for me, it's the sense of togetherness and sheer unbridled joy when we score. So complete unity from all Brentford fans, regardless of age and background, when that ball hits the net. And that's a lovely sentiment. You can just read in those words, you can hear the sound.
The roar,
right?
Yeah,
you can hear the sound of the ball hitting the net and then the roar as everyone sort of jumps up. And Phil says, walking to and into Griffin Park, taking my place on the terrace and waiting for kickoff feels rather ritualistic. And we were saying in the pub beforehand, Dave, isn't it, that actually you don't think about whether or not you're going to go. You just go. Saturday, 3 p.m., you're there.
It's just a given.
It's like you brought up in a very strict religious environment, and on a Friday, whether it's a Friday to prayer or whether it's a Sunday to mass, then you do that. And I don't think about, as you know, I don't get up on a Saturday and go, what should I do today? Oh, I'll go to football. It happens.
Everyone knows where you are on that day.
Exactly. And you go and you're with your people and you share that kind of amazing transformative experience. But I think Gemma puts it best. And Gemma says, so for me, Griffin Park is a church in two ways. First of all, in its fabric as a building, the way different butts have been added over the years, the way all the events and emotions, and let's be honest, prayer that has happened there seems to hang around. And I think we can all say we've been in Griffin Park and, you know, had a quick prayer, even if we're not religious. Gemma's an engineer and she says, I'm a bit obsessed with buildings, unsurprisingly. And though I'm not religious, I visit loads of churches and I've had the privilege of being in an empty Griffin Park on a few occasions. And for me, it's the same feeling, a residue of what's been experienced there over the years. I love it.
That's nice. It's very well put.
Yeah.
I suppose the question is, as you then look ahead to the move, because there has to be excitement about that. Do you know what I mean? It's a strange emotion, isn't it? That you're so sad at the same time. It's also, this has to happen as a football club ultimately to progress. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, it's something we have to embrace. It's, you know, we can you know, get down in the dumps a bit. We can get emotional. We can reminisce, but we have to look forward. There isn't any point in life as well to look backwards constantly. Yep. It's about how the club can progress, obviously maintaining its identity and not compromising on values and ideals. I think that's critical. You don't want the feel of the club to change too much, but we have to progress. But what's important, and you know what this kind of, hopefully this conversation, this section and this book's coming out, and you know there's a whole series of sort of remembrance ceremonies, as it were, that we'll leave and we'll remember the old girl as she would have wanted,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And to mark those, you know, let's be honest, there's not been a huge amount of amazing days there, but all of the amazing days that have been.
What?
Well, you know, we got promoted to the top flight once. We've been promoted out of the bottom division a few times. We've had
some
great
dodgy
cup
moments.
We've had great cup runs. Yeah. We've had 40-odd thousand.
We all have.
There.
That's football.
You know, we've had great. Yeah. But it's not like we've won, you know, European Cup games there and stuff like that. You know, it is our home, and we will remember it and mark it in the right way.
Yeah, and I think a couple of things, like this was Saturday was my first home game of the season, and we've got the countdown board, and we're thinking about how
what
many
games left.
Yeah,
all right.
And I didn't know that was there, and at halftime I was a bit like, oh, this is brutal, but also
God,
like really
that's
beautiful.
That's going to be weird. The last few, isn't
I actually
it?
Thought yeah, it was the right? worst lottery in the world.
You might win it.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, the chances of winning that are very hot, lower than the chances of getting an exact 1,000 in the attendance.
Yeah, no one called up, by the way, with that one.
Cheers.
Oh, disappointed.
But you say it was something you pick up on what you said, Dave, about kind of retaining that kind of identity when you do move on. It is a really important thing, isn't it? Because it's happened, and it happens constantly at other football clubs, doesn't it? You know, building new stadiums and moving forward. And sometimes it's done really well, and sometimes it's not done so well. How much of kind of a consultation, how much kind of information has the football club been giving you? Because
I'm sure they're very sensitive about the fact that, you know, this move cannot be done kind of lightly. It's not about just building this a brand new, you know, swanky stadium. It's about kind of retaining exactly what your football club kind of is, isn't it? And how much has the club been speaking to you about that? And how confident are you that they will deliver that for you?
Yeah, there have been consultation groups going on for the last couple of years, to be honest with you. And they have hired a lady to look after the farewell Griffin Park.
Yeah.
The exact programme I'm not aware of per game, but probably as we get after Christmas when the actual sort of proper countdown starts. There are other events, you know. There's a, you know, I'm publishing a book about Harry Curtis' years. He was the greatest Brentford manager. He took us from 1926 to the, you know, the top flight and the big one of the biggest clubs in Britain. So we've made contact with the Curtis family. They're going to come back. So it's kind of piecing today and various, you know, significant parts in the club's history and bringing different personalities back as the games tick down. How the last match plays out, God only knows. Hopefully it's
lots of tears.
Well, hopefully it's a playoff game to plan after.
God,
that
would be fitting, wouldn't it?
So yeah, so this is all in our minds, you know what I mean, until the season gets to the business end. It's really difficult to work out whether Barnsley at home will actually be the final game or whether it's going to be a Leeds, a Derby, a Barnsley, or whoever.
Yeah, but we're really lucky because we're not having some like out of town giant monstrosity built.
No.
We're moving like 5 minutes down the road, and I think that's super important, or it feels super important to me anyway.
Yeah. So people's trips and journeys to the game doesn't completely change. Because again, you talk about that routine.
Yeah,
I suppose that when people do make that change and suddenly their trip to the ground completely changes, it's weird for people, isn't it? If you've got people going for 30, 40, 50 years of their life and now you ask them to go a different way to the ground, obviously they're going to do it, but it is nice, doesn't it, that you retain the same kind of ritual of going to the same place on the same car, park, train, tube, do you know what I mean, as before?
And history is a very long time. Hopefully that we'll be at our next ground even longer than we were here. And we did have previous grounds. Griffin Park isn't our only ever ground, no. So we have moved from other places. So, you know, but it's a chunk of time, you know, 1904 to, you
That's
know, 2020
is a
significant period of time. So, you know, and the ground's changed significantly within that. So, you know, people that grew up on the Royal Oak end, where there was like, you know, a 15,000-20,000 end, it's a very different ground to that. So they'll be remembering the ground as it was pre-85. But there's a lot of fans that have fallen in love with the ground in the last 5 years. So it's different things to different people. So, you know, it's going to be a different experience that everyone goes through.
Yeah, and some lovely things said about the stadium. Right, we do need to take a break, only until 9 p.m. We need to look ahead to the Leeds game on Wednesday evening. In a short few moments, we're going to be joined by Andrew Dalton, who runs the LUFC Stats. He'll, of course, give his take on the Leeds side of things. And, of course, we'll speak to Dave and Katie as well about how they think that game will go on Wednesday evening. It's the Brentford Fan Show here on Love Sport.
Love Sport.
Yeah, we'll be joined by Andrew Dalton in a moment. He runs LUFC Stats. It is Leeds United up next for Brentford Wednesday evening. I mean, guys, is it a good time to enter Elland Road early on in the season, or is it one you'd rather kind of do a little bit later on when things are kind of more up and running, or hopefully when they've burnt out by the end of the season, as they've tend to have done over the last couple?
Nice.
I've gone straight in there.
Nicely pointed out. Mate, we should have got the old Joy Division. Leeds are falling apart again.
Oh, yeah, that would have been good.
I should have put a bit more thought into that. No, it is one you want to get out of the way, I guess. Yeah. It is probably the toughest away game of the season. We do okay there. We have lost recently, but we went a long time without defeat. We got too many draws, but a couple of wins too. So it is a decent hunting ground for Brentford, and the pressure that Leeds put on their own fans when things aren't on their own players when things aren't going particularly well. It's one of those if you don't concede in the first 5 minutes and you can kind of get the game
settle in.
We don't. As I said earlier, it could go one or two ways. I can't see it being a draw, to be honest with you, on Wednesday night.
I think when I stick my accumulator on for Wednesday, a bet responsibly, it is a both teams to score one for me. We have got Andrew Dalton from LUFC Stats. Andrew, let's start there. I mean, are you expecting goals, Mr. Statman?
Yeah, it's always a bit of a spicy affair any time sort of Brentford come down to London. Obviously, last season we had the incident with the penalty and I think the alleged headbutt was Sergio Canos, and obviously Pontus scored in the last minute. Obviously, now play for Brentford. So, I think we started off reasonably well. We've taken 7 points from 9. It's so early to really tell at the start of the season. I think from a league perspective, we all got probably slightly carried away last season and caught in the emotion of it all, and it was probably you guys that ended our dream down at Griffin Park, a ground we've not won out since 1961. So yeah, I think it will be goals on Wednesday night. I think it's one I think we're all looking forward to.
Evening, mate. How are you? You all right?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all good. You brought up last season's encounter. It was a bit of a feisty one on the TV.
Yes.
Not all your games were on TV, I know, but that was on TV as well.
It certainly was. Yeah.
Yeah. Sky Leeds.
Yeah, I suppose so.
But obviously, you know, Pontus's return to Elland Road tomorrow, it's not even the elephant in the room. It's going to be the biggest talking point in the pubs, in the away pubs and the home pubs. What kind of reception is he going to get? What's the build up to this?
I think from sort of reading social media, it's not always easy to gauge a full opinion on social media, certainly through Twitter, that I think it'll be mixed. I think from my perspective, when he came to Leeds in sort of August 2016, it was a bit unheard of, and he settled in very quickly and became a bit of a cult hero at Elland Road and scored some vital goals. And I think from a Leeds perspective, it's just how quickly the deal was done. And obviously, he moved along to West London and to Griffin Park. So I certainly think there'll be a lot of fans that will probably applaud him. And I think there'll probably be some fans that won't. I think that's just football, unfortunately. But from my point of view, I thought he did really well at Leeds. Thought he was a bit of a hero at Leeds. But players move on in football, and it's just part and parcel of the game, really.
It's been difficult for us as well, because obviously we had our opinions of Pontus after that game. And when we found out that, you know, there was the talk of him coming to Griffin Park was actually serious and not clickbait, then we kind of had to kind of recalibrate what we thought of him.
Yeah,
and now he's our club captain. And it would seem that we're getting the right Pontus Janssen, not the problematic Pontus Janssen.
Yeah, I think there were times there's been a lot of stories floating about in news articles and what have you, that when he's on it, he's probably one of the best central defenders in the league. When it doesn't kind of go his way, he kind of sulks at times. And if you can get the best defender in the league that we saw for quite a long time at Leeds, you've got a very, very good defender there. Yeah, disappointed to see him go away. I'm disappointed to see Leeds players leave. But from my point of view, he gave my best wishes and he did a good job while I was at Leeds and we move on. But I certainly think it'll be an interesting reception he gets on Wednesday evening.
Hey Andrew, it's Katie here.
Hello, Katie.
Does that feel like he's gone from a bit of a sort of hero to zero for you guys in terms of your fan reception?
It's a bit difficult to sort of say from hero to zero, because to me, once you're at a football club and you're kind of involved in that football club, and as I said, to become a bit of a hero with sort of lapping it all up and what have you. Players to me never go as zero. It's a short career, football, and if you're not wanted at one club, then another opportunity comes along, and he's gone to Griffin Park, he's gone to a club to me that always gives Leeds problems, a club that are on the up and up, that are moving into a brand new stadium next season. Seem to always be there or thereabouts, whether it be under Dean Smith or Thomas Frank. I think he's done a really good job at Griffin Park. And that's again up to Pontus. So I think it'll be a mixed reception, Katie, that he'll get, but certainly not hero to zero from my perspective. He did a lot of good at Leeds. He got Leeds certainly in a lot of games in his first season. He's got a lot of important goals. And we'll just see what we're going to get off him on Wednesday night. I'll either score or I'll have a stinker. So I'm hoping for the latter.
That sounds about right. So can I ask you about how important you think your home form is going to be for you guys this season? Because last season you won, 14 at home, and then you also had 11 away wins, which is quite a tasty number.
I'm certainly on the old adage, old school, that if you win your home games,
fortress,
and you draw your away games, you're certainly going to be up there. Now, obviously, we look back at some crucial home defeats, Sheffield United back in March, and then, of course, Wigan on Good Friday, the two home games that kill the ultimate dream of getting into the Premier League. So I think home form is massive for any team that wants to challenge for promotion. So if you win your home games, it does kind of take the pressure off away from home. So if Leeds can win 15, 16 home games, what's that, 48 points? and you're picking up points away from home, I think you've got a very good chance of certainly making the plus, if not making automatic promotion.
Yeah. Well, Wednesday night again is a kind of a strange combination of red button availability, yeah. which yeah. means you know, a lot of people on a midweek night that don't want to take, you know, a day off work or yeah. whatever, and obviously your infamous ticket prices, where it's north of 42 quid yeah. for an away fan to get in. So I don't think there's going to be there will be a loyal strong band of bees going up there, but it's a toughie, isn't it? There's a lot of Leeds fans that kind of defend your ticket policy. Do you find that a really sticky one to defend?
It's difficult because for me, like in the Premier League, I think away ticket should be capped at £30, and making it a good price for people that have got children as well, and especially on a Wednesday evening. For me, I think this is something the EFL have certainly got to look at as far as fixtures go, because making a team from West London travel all the way up to Yorkshire on a Wednesday evening, okay, it might be in the school holidays, but people have got jobs and people working, and people are going to be getting back at, 2, 3, 4 in the morning. And I had it when I was going up to Griffin Park with Leeds a couple of years ago. It always seemed to be sort of a midweek game, and for some unknown reason why they don't make these games just Saturday games. Certainly Saturday 3 o'clock games, can also be played on Saturday lunchtime last year at Elland Road. It just makes more sense. But when do the EFL and common sense ever go together?
But what's the stats, Andrew? Are you the highest priced tickets, particularly away? Do you know?
I think us and Sheffield Wednesday are quite high priced. I know Ipswich is quite high priced. They were charging 40-odd quid last season. So it's difficult because it's supply and demand again when it comes to football tickets. And
Rip off Yorkshire.
Yeah, exactly. And if people are going to come up to the game and buy the ticket, there's always going to be the supply and demand there. So it's a really difficult one, because it's a real certainly fine balancing act between clubs, not just Leeds, and certainly other clubs as well in the Football League that make up the ticket prices. To me, I'd like to see a cap, as I say, 30 quid for all away games like they do in the Premier League, and I think you might be able to get more fans up to away games.
Before we're going to go on to predictions in a second, but you know, you run a stats site. And on Besotted, we do talk about stats quite a lot. Our favourite percentage is 74%. What is your favourite percentage?
Oh, crikey! Favourite percentage. That's
put you on the spot.
Crikey! I think at the moment we're on about probably 80-odd%.
80%. Okay.
7 points from 9.
Close,
and what have you. Although my favourite number, and I'm going to plug this a little bit, it's our 100th year anniversary this year in October, and I've got a book coming out, Leeds United, the first 100 years, which will be available in all good bookstores come October. So I think 100 is probably my favourite percentage, and I just hope we've still got an unbeaten run come 10 o'clock on Wednesday evening.
Nice one. Slick plug. Andrew, go on then, let's give you a prediction for the game.
Oh, it's never easy. Up until sort of 2016-17, when we beat you with a late Cal Bartley goal, and then Liam Cooper scored the winner when Dean Smith moaned about the grass. You had a very good record at Elland Road. You're always one of these tough sides to beat. And I remember Alex Pritchard, I think, scored a winning goal the previous year. I think without Mope, I think you might have lost something sort of up top. I think I fancy leading the odd goal in 3.
All right, well, top man. Andrew, thanks very much for your time, mate.
Thank you.
No problem. You take care.
There we are. That's Andrew Dalton, LUFC stats. So, look, we've got about a minute left. His prediction, he's confident, as you expect him to be. He mentioned you've got a decent record, though up at Leeds. What do you think? Can you go there and get a result?
Look, he's got every right to be confident, let's be honest
with you. They all are.
Yeah. they're still a strong team. They're a very high-tempo team. The good thing about Leeds is they'll try and play football against us, which gives us a chance. We're a very good footballing team. He's right to point out the Morpay situation. We talked about this number 9. But if we approach the game right, if we don't concede early, if we stay in the game, if we're in the second half, I think we can get a point. We are capable of winning. So if we can avoid defeat, I'll be a happy bee tomorrow on Wednesday night.
Yeah, same. I think avoiding defeat is the most important thing. But I think it's going to be spicy, to steal Andrew's word from earlier. I think Pontus has got a lot of skin in the game, so I'm going 2-1.
Ooh, I like it.
Bees, obviously.
Go on, stick your neck out. What are you saying?
I'll go 2-1 bees.
couple of wins. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see Brentford, a draw, win and defeat so far. Is it time to head up to Elland Road? One of the championship favourites. They will be to get promoted. It'll be very interesting to see. It is Wednesday night. It is Brentford away at Elland Road, and the Brentford Fan Show. We're back next week, yeah?
Yep.
You're going to be here?
We'll be back.
Oh, wunderbar. And up next here on Love Sport Radio, Matt Beadle is going to be in the hot seat. He's taking you through for the European Football Show.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.